Good evening, everybody.
Evening.
Yeah, people are saying late, but it's literally 1 minute past. I was literally just chilling.
Yeah.
It's always the meme, isn't it? It's always the meme that we're late.
Uh-huh. Yep, we are. Well, less late than some. More late than others.
I'll make sure Refresh is in chat, because here's the thing, guys. YouTube doesn't actually start the stream for you most of the time, so... that's quite funny, really.
Uh-huh.
Anyway... Yeah. Yes. Anyway, Trig.
Yes.
How have you been on this fine day? Although our little preacher.
You know what? It is absolutely pissing it down with rain. I basically been playing The Witcher for a little bit today because I woke up with a hangover because I was at a wake all of yesterday and I drank too much. And then people were going, you need to drink water before you go to bed. And I was like, there's water in beer. I'll drink more beer. And
it's so humid as well. It's terrible. British people complaining about the weather. That is our format now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I did inherit a nice barometer. I need to calibrate it a bit better. It's saying it's changeable at the moment. It's not changeable. It's pissing it down. But it is working. yes.
Yes. To Mitch's question in chat, yes, Mitch, we will be discussing Crab on Head. She may come back up at some point. But a lot of people are going to think I'm going to be getting at people directly. Not really. The point of this stream is mostly just to talk about the pretty universal phenomenon of the people not being able to deal with the acceleration in the world. It's going to be a bit more in general terms. So this isn't really going to be a drama stream. So I don't think it's going to be that. Some normal YouTube-y things before I start. Obviously, you can become a member. That's still enabled, which is the main way a lot of you guys have chosen to support. So thank you for that. You can send super chats, which someone's already done. Thank you, Coney Current Year. He says drinking French wine and playing CK3, very comfy. That does sound very comfy.
Yeah, nice.
The best way to donate to us though is via Streamlabs still. Streamlabs doesn't take anywhere near as much of the cut. We get it directly. We don't have to wait for YouTube to pay our AdSense, which I have had actually quite a lot of trouble with recently. AdSense has pretty exorbitant demands on the information you give them. So the best way still is to donate through Streamlabs to make sure we have some beer money. But yeah, we talked about it a bit last time, but you were at a wake yesterday.
Yep.
I'll be at a wake tomorrow. That's why we're not doing democratization. It's already all the notes are done, all the links are done, all the slides are actually done as well. I need to give you those at some point. But
yes, yep.
I'll be waking up at about 8 a.m. tomorrow, so I don't want to be up past midnight, honestly, especially because I'm going to a funeral. So it's, as we mentioned last time, there's been a lot of synchronized grandma death.
Yes, no. It's been a bit brutal. I'm actually, you know, we've now got a crime number from the police. We are actually approaching what happened to my grandmother as an actual crime, and the police are taking it forward, which is kind of major. And got a few people jumping quite scared, apparently.
Which, fair enough. Well, that's good. You always want people jumping scared.
Yeah, no, it's a fucking mess, but yes. Fortunately, yours wasn't such a horrendous case, was it? It was, but anyway.
No. It was relatively as expected as these things can be, really. But yeah.
It's the unfortunate thing in the world that grandparents, you know, They eventually pop their clogs. Sadly, it's something everybody has to deal with. This was my last one. I've buried all four now. Which is part of life.
Same, but you're a lot older than me. So anyway, we'll stop talking about morbid shit. I mentioned last week I'm at an event and said I will put up a video on Monday. I'll put up a video this Monday because when I said that last time, they hadn't actually announced the venue properly. It's actually going to be at Warwick University, which is a bit out of the way, so I'm still planning how I'm going to get there. I think someone's giving me a lift, Mr. House from Twitter, so if you're watching, Mr. House, thank you. We're going to get a lift from Coventry, but yeah, there'll be a proper trailer for that on Monday.
Cool.
I have one ready. I didn't have permission to give out the event location yet, because obviously because of a lot of protests and things, it's better to keep it secret until you know, as last minute as possible, but I will be speaking at an event at it's using one of Warwick University's function kind of rooms or locations. From what I can read from the event, it's called it's by Sidings. It's the theme of the event is What Happens Next. And I'll be presenting a 1 hour talk that will possibly may or may not be being published in a book of essays at some point. But that I don't know when that will be printed, and I haven't been asked for my proper draft yet, so I don't think that'll be for a little while. But yeah, I could be having something published in a book of essays, and I will be speaking at an event at Warwick University campus, in the nearest town of which is Coventry, I think. So that's pretty cool, because a lot of people have been asking me what I've been doing, and that's what I've been up to. I've been actually trying to plan a lot of, you know, real life organizational stuff. It's just very difficult at the moment. And I get that kind of brings us on to what we're talking about a little bit, really.
Yeah. The whole it's not 2015 anymore, which it does start sometimes feel like people, you know, still acting like it is. I was talking to some friends earlier about this. The why and the how, I do kind of get. Oh, we just had another super chat there from Matthew Ivey. You guys should speak about Orion McIntyre or Charlemagne. Both are acquaintances of AA and would be good conversation about acceleration. Yeah.
Aaron McIntyre, I'm aware of, and Charlemagne, I'm aware of both of them.
Yeah.
I don't actually have lines of contact to them. So I've kind of gone through a lot of, as you know, I go through social media profiles pretty quickly.
Yeah.
If you guys can get me in touch with them or find me somewhere where I can contact them directly where I won't get skipped over, like Twitter's pretty bad for that, because even I, with only having like 100 and something followers at the moment, trying to fly under the radar, even I don't see all of my messages and replies because Twitter just filters that. But if I can get in contact with them, we're more than willing to get a lot more guests on. We did have Peter Quinas about a month and a half ago, which was very, very good to have Mr. I keep like my brain keeps saying Mr. Quiznos, and I know he hates that.
Yeah, don't call him that. He's yeah.
No, he said only his brother calls him that to wind him up.
Pete's a good guy.
Pete's a good guy, but my brain keeps going Quiznos, and I hate it, and it's wrong.
Yeah, no, his Twitter account is very based as well.
I'm pretty sure Evelyn might be able to bridge the gap there, because she's got some contacts. She's a good mover and shaker, and has helped as I always try and say, she has helped a huge amount with the democratization stuff.
Oh, so unbelievably, yes.
Yeah. Yes. She has been very good with that. But no, it's I'm trying to tackle this subject in a way that isn't too drama-ish.
No,
because it's quite a universal thing.
This is what I was thinking. I was trying to sort of formulate exactly that. We don't want to sort of, oh, this guy, blah blah blah, you know, lol, stuck in 20. I get what's happened. People started accounts in 2014, 2013, 2015, whatever. They rise to success. They make, you know, a success of things, and it becomes a formula that you stick with because you're making a living, and you end up with, you know what, I've got people that are helping me with this. I don't want to move my format too much. I don't want to change my format too much because I've got people relying on me. But it is not 2015 anymore, and things are changing. And It's the question for me is why do you get into this? Why do you get into the going onto YouTube and going, hey guys, are you aware communism is bad? Are you doing it just because you want to echo the same thing other people are saying, or are you trying to make a change in the world?
Well, I was a bit playful with the thumbnail, because those are like, I dug out like 2015 dank memes. I actually kind of missed it. Dank memes was a more innocent era, I will say.
Yeah.
A much more innocent era of memery. But I think the problem is that a lot of people became very active in 2015. Most of the quote-unquote anti-woke, anti-SJW content creators we have, people like Crowder, you know?
Yeah.
People like Sargon. People like me, really. I was one of the hangers-on from that crowd.
It's when I first noticed what was going off. I mean, I was busy. I was literally too busy playing computer games to even watch YouTube until 2015 and going, holy crap, what the fuck is going on? Excuse my language, but literally, what the hell is going on with the world? And then stuff. And yes, Mitch, there's a whole bunch of people that were either, I mean, I was watching, I was starting to get involved in Discord servers. You were actually out there on YouTube. Other people were much bigger and making success of themselves. But it does seem to have been the launch point, 2015. It's, you know, Gamergate, etc. We started to notice that there was a problem in the world.
It is, but it's, I think, a big problem. And there's a good chat if you want to go find it. I'm trying to shill British Knight because his channel just has unfortunately been buried by YouTube. Big up to British Knight. He's a good content creator. I will actually link his YouTube. Guys probably know him, but I'll actually link his YouTube in the chat and probably in the description at the end of this video.
Good content creator. Decent bloke too, as well. Just content. He's a good guy. I like Rich Knight.
he's someone I had a conversation with a few months ago.
Yeah.
And basically what I was doing was telling people really that the organization in real life is what will count. And it's not, you know, it's not even going to events like I'll be doing at the end of this month. What it's doing is being in your community, talking to your family, you know, raising a family in a lot of cases.
Yep.
It's doing what you can in your immediate area. And I think a lot of people don't want to hear that. They don't want to be told that. And they don't want to be told that the process itself is not something that will bring change.
Yes, I totally agree. And as I said again with Bridge Knight, yeah, be the guy that people will turn to instead of going to government. Be the guy that fills in the pothole at the end of your street. Be proactive. Make government not necessary around you. Certainly, there is another side to this, though. I was talking with a good friend of mine last night about this, and I'm not going to go into the details of what we were talking about, but there is an activism side that is badly missing. Yeah, that from, I dare say our side of the thing, but I'm going to say it because people know where that line is drawn roughly.
Well, let's loosely say libertarians. There is a real lack of libertarian community organization. It's kind of a joke.
Yeah.
In the 90s and the 2000s especially, libertarians became the butt of many jokes because they were so ineffectual. Their rhetoric was so weak. And they were seen as people who didn't have a vision. Rightly or wrongly, the intellectuals within them weren't. You had people like Rothbard around then. You had people like Hopper coming to the fore. You know, it was actually a time of quite good intellectual output for the libertarian kind of movement or whatever you want to call it in general. But there was no presence there. And as I keep trying to tell people, the establishment uses people like Antifa and people like Black Lives Matter as an agitation arm. They are the people who are allowed to do the violence, and they are effective. You know, they are effective at doing it, and they are the ones who are allowed to move outside of, you know, what would you loosely call the rules of the game or the social contract. And they are willing to, you know, perpetrate political violence on people. And because they're willing to do that, they win. it's a depressingly simple equation, but if you have two groups of people, one group is willing to use violence and the other isn't, the group who is willing to use violence will win.
Yes.
I a lot of people are like, well, don't you just want to be Antifa? It's like, no, Antifa is something different. That is agitation that is essentially state-sponsored. But what you can do is you can have civil disobedience. You can have, you start by just saying no. And if that is met with violence, you have the right to defend yourself. I think that's as far as I can really go in saying that.
I was going
to
say, we're dangerous. I mean, we could go very dangerously Fed-posty here.
It's not just that. It's the case of, as this was demonstrated in the 2020 election, which, you know, you should never forget that that was an election that was, at the very least, you know, nullified in terms of its result. At the very least, it was so fraudulent that we don't know who won it. At the very least, it was so controversial, the rules were changed so many times that you couldn't say that was a quote-unquote free and fair election, even in the rules of their own rhetoric of their own game, again.
Yeah.
But what can you do when that happens? You know, what can you do when the process breaks down? What can you do when really the hegemony rears its head and the fact that there's a group of people who are in power and have, you know, such a high degree of control over certain aspects, especially in politics, is their domain. I think a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that leaders are all powerful, they are omnipotent, they have these grand conspiracies, but really they don't.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, state power is as inefficient as many other state institutions.
I mean, at the present moment, a lot of people, it's like, oh, what can we do? I know, let's look at what Vosch is saying and let's debunk him. Or somebody else. I use Vosch because he's literally the only one I know of from that side of things, essentially. And the only reason I know of him is people keep on talking about him. Frankly, I wish, you know, people would stop talking about these people. Don't give them the power. Don't need, oh, this person wants to debate you. Good, that's nice for him. Don't care.
Another aspect of not having the 2015 mindset, and again, it's not something that I think some people need to be shouted at for it because they are very obviously just making money off it.
Yeah.
And I've had conversations with people where they say, well, that's going to affect my metrics. That's going to get me deplatformed. We can, you know, I agree with you, but I can't say that because I will be deplatformed, is essentially what I've got off multiple people with 100,000 subscriber accounts, like more than 100,000 subscriber accounts. Make it that way, you will. But I've heard that from multiple people that they said, well, I acknowledge that the 2020 election was stolen, but if I keep saying that, they're going to deplatform me. And I'd rather have a platform. And quite frankly, you know, I don't mince words. And I've told those people myself that that basically makes you Susan Wozniak, or however you say it, it's house nigger. You become the court, you know, anti-SJW YouTuber. If you're not willing to go outside the terms of service, if you're so worried about saying the truth that you're so worried about losing your platform for saying the truth that you won't say it, then you're essentially useless. You might as well be Jake Paul. Go make prank videos because you've already surrendered. I mean, people like, is that really the hill you're going to die on? You know, are you really going to die on the hill of not saying nigger on the internet? It's like, well, yes. don't capitulate on that.
Yep.
Just don't capitulate on anything. That's how a lot of these, you know, activists, whether controlled opposition or controlled by the, you know, by the establishment or not, that's how they've won.
What was it?
They've just said no.
What was it? Clerks 2, the film Clerks 2, where the whole porch monkey scene. It was brilliant. I would love to see them try to make that again now, because that was just before the world went crazy. But that whole scene, and if you haven't seen it, look up Porch Monkey Clerks 2. It is a great, hilarious little scene, and you wouldn't be made now. It's only, what, 5, 6, 7 years old. But, you know, whereas they're going porch monkey, that's not a racial term. Nigger, that's a racial term. You know, coon, cheekaboo, that's, etc. Fucking just freedom of speech. Say what the hell you mean.
In that situation, you have become the boiled frog.
Yeah. Yeah.
Louis Levi is still around somehow. Did we have him on? I've had him on Seal of Approval before. I've been on, I think, his channel before a couple of years ago. I need to get him on here. I think he's been on here once.
He hasn't been. Arch. He's we've had Arch on. We haven't had Louis on. We do. Because I would love to speak to Louis.
I need to have Louis again, because Pastor Louis and his sermons are very, he's one of the people as well who's, He's of the same mind that I am, that he's lost a lot of respect for a few people, rightly or wrongly. But it's something you have to keep an eye on, that the content that was appropriate when a lot of this online, quote, you know, what people refer to as the skeptosphere, or even some of the people who were more considered the alt-right, all those people. Those people need to realize that we are in a very different time now. We are in a very different place politically, and in terms of where we are down the line of the process of essentially being loaded into boxcars.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw, what was it? What was there something in happening in Ireland the other day? And let me have a quick look, because I remember reading it, and it was yet another thing that's been happening in Ireland. And my response was, if you don't start and fight back now, you're going to lose the ability to fight. And then you're just going to pass this nightmare on to your children and their children, and sooner or later, something's got to break. But if you don't do it, somebody else has got to, and they're going to be weaker every single time. I daren't go into. Is me literally worried about the type of thing. Well, what do you say without getting yourselves, you know, literally sort of, oh my god, I'm full blown Fed posting, and you know, telling people how to make.
Well, that's the point. The point is that there's a difference between being banned off YouTube and, you know, being arrested and possibly being killed. There's a different degree there, and the, you know, there is a time and a place, but a lot of these people aren't willing to say the milder versions of what needs to be said. They aren't willing to even say in private fully what they think. They're just too afraid. And I think with the rhetoric that has come out of a lot of places, that is disappointing in many ways. But again, I don't want to make this too dramatic. The problem, I think, is that a lot of people are around about my age. They're late 20s to early 30s, most of them. And really what they want is a reversion to a time when they thought politics was sane. The vast majority of people I see want a reversion to politics of the 80s or 90s in some way, shape, or form. They want a lot of the political correctness to go away. They want maybe slightly lower taxes. And a lot of them would settle for a Reaganization of modern politics. And that's where their line is. That's where they stop. And they don't want to acknowledge the systemic problems that have been growing, really, you know, as we've talked about since the turn of the century, within modern, you know, the problems with democracy itself, the problems with, you know, all of this post-war consensus stuff, and the fact that really humans have existed for hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of years in societies, at least. You know, we don't know how long humans have organized in large groups, had language, you know. There's certainly monuments up in the north of Scotland and, you know, maybe buried in the English Channel that are more than 10,000 years old.
Yeah, I was going to say it's at least 12,000. I mean, certainly 10,500 BC is where you get sort of datings of pyramids and so on in Egypt. It's I would say you could probably take a rough guess at 20,000 years ago at least and not be far wrong. Certainly sort of things like Hyperborean mythology points towards that type of
so era. There's a couple more donations I want to read here. Cool. Sorry, I missed your donation there, Mitch. The only people more cringe than people stuck in 2015 are those who got red-pilled in 2016 and still just gawk at the shit happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Some of those people I can forgive because they're a bit toe in the water. I won't criticize people for not having time. Honestly, they don't know what's going on. A lot of normies out there don't need to know the whole truth of it. Another aspect is you need to make a message that's simple enough. Another argument I've had consistently is the fact you have to be able to say that those in charge are evil, that they are evil. And there's a lot of evidence that you can say that, all the Epstein stuff, all the children's home stuff in the UK, all the rape gang stuff and all the children in care stuff, all of it's still going on, and all of it, you know, facilitated by the establishment. But you have to be willing to say that those who you move against are evil. Yes. You have to be willing to say that. And you also have to acknowledge that those people, call them the left, call them the establishment, call them whatever you want, that your identified enemy group wants you dead, that they want to kill you, because they do. That is what's happening. A lot of people...
Yeah. It is bonkers. I found the thing I was looking for. This was it. Ireland has gone full Footloose. They are banning dancing.
Oh God, yes. This is the plot of Footloose, isn't it? I thought I was losing my mind. It is Footloose.
Yeah, only Kevin Bacon can save Ireland now. And another, thank you, another donation.
I have to say, Shlomo Shekelberg has been pretty consistent in donating $14.88. They seem to do it every time they can, so thank you there, Shlomo. Kizza GT said, hopefully you'll see us both. I don't know. For those who don't know, there's a small gathering in Manchester on Saturday. I hope I'll be going. I don't know what shape I'll be in after the funeral tomorrow, honestly. But I'm hopefully going to go into Manchester tomorrow. So Kizza GT says, I'll see you both on Saturday. You'll love my credit card. Ah, yeah. Don't feed me too many drinks, though, because it'll be like a Sargon event where I chundered every war.
Yep. No, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to make that because my dad is over from Spain and I'm seeing him on Saturday, and then I've got somebody else coming over on Sunday and one or two things. So unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to make it. But
oh well. But I think I probably will. So Glowy with the $3 says libertarians have shown themselves to be completely unable to fight the establishment or uphold their beliefs because the number one rule it seems to. One rule seems to not commit to any standards. I would agree with you. The modern mainstream libertarian movement has been wish-washy.
Mm-hmm.
People are incredibly surprised by what I've been saying for the past year. And I think that's a good thing. Honestly, people who call me an extremist, like anyone who wants to do anything outside of the narrow confines of the political structure is now seen as an extremist. So I think the only way that you can create change is to be a quote unquote extremist, because if you don't believe in any aspect of the you have to go through all the steps of the ritual in order to be an extremist. So you might as well go whole hog.
I know, I tend to agree. Again, what I was saying last night to a friend is we almost need to start our own series of propaganda, essentially, of rumors and nonsense that may not even need to be true, and don't say it in your own words. Just leak information out that might be fake that would set a narrative against what the current zeitgeist is.
You don't even need to do that. I know there's the whole tell a better lie thing, but I don't even think you need to. You need to tell a better story.
Yes,
the stories are true. And
I was going to say, if you've got the truth on your side, by all means, go for it. Yeah, brilliant.
The thing is, you have to be willing to take the extra step and use the rhetoric. Like I said, you can't be afraid of saying that. You know, I had that whole rant. I ended up ranting it at Undoom that time, just over and over again. That the left wants you dead. The left wants to kill you. And that's true. That was in the wake of the shooting in Portland. During a lot of the earlier this year stuff and last year of a lot of the political violence there. It's a case that yes, that there's a lot of people out there with the backing of the political establishment who want you dead for your beliefs. And I don't think that's a particularly controversial statement. And you have to act accordingly. You can't be politically you can't be politically naive in thought or action. And that really, I think, is something that people don't want to deal with. They essentially want to laugh at SJWs and be put back in the Matrix. You know, they should have taken the blue pill.
Yeah, a lot of people kind of do. A lot of people kind of want to keep their eyes closed and you know, eventually they'll be, you know, working out whether or not the car to the train cart is you know correct for various reasons. It's you can't just keep letting them get away with it. You're going to end up literally. You can't. You have to fight back at some point.
Well,
you have to go. You know, they are, as you say, they're trying to kill us.
Moving outside of the system isn't, you know, people always focus on the violent aspect of it. And, you know, you have to be willing to say that if you are met with violence, that you will defend yourself. And again, that's how I will phrase it, because it's true.
Mm-hmm.
But there is still the options of civil disobedience. There's still the options of just organizing without them. There's a lot of people who are more egoists, even though these people don't seem to want to organize with each other at all. They just seem to want to be completely atomized. But there is a great something to be said for, you know, it's very be the change you want to be generic, but honestly, it is. It's you can just start doing things, and the mindset that you need permission from your fellow man is part of the problem here. Part of the problem is that people think that they need to vote for something rather than just doing it.
Yeah. I mean, if Antifa can go and protest any sort of meeting that we or Sargon or whoever has, yeah, I don't see anybody protesting Antifa's meetings. Although there was that meme, that fantastic meme of a bunch of Antifa in America literally crapping themselves when a bunch of masked guys standing outside in some smoke.
The guys with the flares. Like bookshop thing.
Yeah, that was hilarious because, you know what, if that was happening every single time Antifa got together, Antifa would stop getting together. Just saying. Well,
They're not a grassroots. Like I said, you can't see them as a grassroots organization because they're not.
They're not.
Largely top down, organized and funded by people like NGOs. But again, yes, that's kind of a side point. But the issue is that they have shown themselves to be willing to step outside of the political norms. So you are not playing on a level playing field anyway. You know, people like Black Lives, any activist organization that is pushing the agenda of the establishment has shown itself to be willing to push and go outside the political norms. And those who are on the quote-unquote right and who are quote-unquote conservatives absolutely, you know, deny the opportunity or the impetus or even the discussion of moving outside of the pure political process. And that is why they lose. You know, there's the old joke, being conservative means you lose. The more you lose, the more conservative you are. I can't remember who first said that, but it's true. Well, and that seems to be what happens.
It is. I mean, it's a weird thing to say, especially considering in England, the conservatives are almost always the party in power.
Yes, that they are the party of power.
They are the party of power in England, and yet they are never the ones that get... I mean, I could bang on about Maggie Thatcher being the only conservative leader that's ever done anything done for certainly the last, God knows, 40 years. But it's the truth.
Even that was kind of a false dawn, though. All she did was move things slightly back from their absolute height of almost complete socialism of the 70s. Yep. She still was someone who was extremely loyal and defensive of the NHS. She was still someone who partook in jingoism, especially with the Falklands War, and used that as a prop for political power. There's still a lot of issues there. A lot of people say that the post-war consensus ended in the 1980s, and mm-hmm. it demonstrably didn't, because what you got next was you got the boring era of John Major, which was a holding pattern. They seemed to just not want to be in power. And then you got Tony Blair in the US, you got Bill Clinton, and the real, mm-hmm. you know, rearing of the kleptocrat Democrats, and the party of the intelligence apparatus. It was, you know, that was relatively new under the Democrats, that they were so open about their commitment to the intelligence apparatus, because really mm-hmm. they hadn't been in power consistently since the Kennedys, who were at odds with the CIA.
The Kennedys and the CIA didn't get on. This is news to me. Wait, what have you gave you that idea, apart from the fact that John F. Kennedy got his head blown off by the CIA? I mean, the mafia. I mean, we don't know who did it. It was a lone gunman, honestly. Sure it was. Yeah, I mean, it's going back to what you were saying about libertarians, though. Something I meant to say at the time is the problem we've got with the libertarians and libertarian ideals and people like that. Libertarian Party in America, you see them standing, they'd look like the monster raving loony party. They always do.
That's quite deliberate, like I said. That is a symptom of participating in the process. That's where I think the Libertarian Party is a wonderful example of how the political process... for anyone who doesn't just want to either join the Republican or Democratic Party and, you know, maybe embezzle some money, just doesn't function. That is what happens when libertarianism goes through the mangle of the American political process. That is the result, and that is a reality. And we should point to that and say, this is what following the process gets you.
Yeah, I mean, Vermin Supreme is leading the Libertarian Party. The guy's got a Wellington boot on his head. Nobody's... I mean, yeah. I just... Well, no. No, that's...
Well, those are the libertarians allowed to participate in the process. Those are the ones who are allowed to be part of democracy. That's what you get. Everyone else either gets shut out. Everyone else gets shut out.
Shut out or shot out. Yeah.
But there's again, not to Fed post too hard, but there's a lot of people who've talked about the American Forever Wars coming home.
Yes.
But, you know, Green Zone Washington is really an example that the technology that was developed and the policy that was developed in Afghanistan and Iraq was really just a prototype of how to oppress the American people, which is very true. But no one has grappled with the fact that in order to, the only people who have survived an American Forever War are the Taliban and the Viet Cong. And that really, if you're interested in liberty, you know, your icon, you'd be better looking to Osama bin Laden more than you'd be better looking to someone like Donald Trump, is the idea of some people, let's say. It's the idea. Well, it's the idea that how do you resist a power like that? And you make yourself unsquashable, and you have to show that you are somebody who is willing to go as far as is possible, and make it so that they will suffer more than you do until they leave. I mean, rightly or wrongly, I'm not endorsing the Taliban or what they want, or their aims or goals or their ideology.
No.
But they won. They're currently retaking Afghanistan.
Yes.
Taliban won.
The only reason they won, and the same reason that the Viet Cong won, is that America, bless them, they might have the biggest army in the world, this, that, and the other. They do not have the testicular fortitude to actually win a war the way you need to win a war when you are talking about an insurgent war.
The thing is that they did. They killed so many of the Vietnamese people during the war. I'm not saying cryo. I can't read your name there. Sorry. I'm not saying that Bin Laden is an example of freedom. What I'm saying is that tactically, he was successful. And there's people when I've talked about this with people like Pol Pot or Mao or Stalin, they're like, "Wow, how can you endorse them?" I'm like, "No, I'm not endorsing them. You have to look at how they took and wielded power to understand how power works."
Mm-hmm.
Whether you believe it was an inside job or not, Osama bin Laden changed the world. 9/11 changed, and it's still changing the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Patriot Act, the airports were never the same again. And
I was going to say, a bunch of guys in a cave who were poorly funded, like the whole Tora Bora cave complex thing was a complete fantasy of the American government. Hmm. Like some guys in a dusty cave completely managed to pivot the entire course of American, both domestic and foreign politics. And whether you believe that the American administration and foreign administration played along with it, propped them up and used them as patsies, it still happened. You know, the conspiracy or the impetus behind it, in a way, doesn't matter. It still happened, and it still changed the way politics was done. And you have to study success. Like, there's a lot of people who are talking about Lenin currently, because Lenin has a good way of looking at power. It doesn't mean you should be a communist, but you have to learn the lessons from people who have successfully changed the world around them.
Yes.
And most often than not, that is done outside of an electoral process. Again, I'll stop ranting in a second, but I'll rambling.
No, mostly, I'm glad you brought up Lenin, because I was about to, because you were right. And Lenin knew how to wield power. He knew what he was doing, and he knew how the route to success. His politics aside, his tactics are very, very strong. Saul Alinsky, strong tactics. What's his name? Robert Greene, The 47 Laws of Power. Good book, worth reading, worth memorizing those rules, because they're strong tactics. Whether or not you agree with the people's politics aside, politics be damned, the tactics, the methodologies that they use and suggest for gaining power are...
There's a lot of donations built up here.
Oh, Glowy has been sending in a lot of donations.
A little bit, not spamming, but thank you for the spam. It keeps us fed. Yes. We will eat the spam.
Yes. Have you noticed Fischenberg has been
I have seen Fischenberg. No, he just pops up. We don't comment on him. He's just there. But yeah, I'll read these out quickly. Sorry, Slomo Shekelberg actually did have a message. He said, "Hello, fellow whites. What are we talking about today?" Mitch said, "To clarify my previous comment, they basically believe that all this happened in 2016, and before that, everything was just normal." Yeah, I've seen people say that.
Really
Chloe said, "I disagree that they want to kill you. They want to control you till they can get rid of you. Yeah, we are still necessary for the luxury." Yeah, it is more complex than that, but if you make yourself too much trouble, you know, you will just end up like Seth Rich, or you will just be Epstein, or you will end up like, what is it, 4 Capitol Hill police were on now?
4.
You saw that trick.
Yeah, 4
suicides.
Yeah, no,
four of them.
I mean, police officers commit suicide. Police officers get upset, but why 4? This is a very large amount of police officers that are involved in that one thing have committed suicide in a very short period of time. I don't know whether they saw something or saw somebody doing something that they shouldn't have done, and as a result have become incredibly depressed about the whole thing, so to speak. One of them was very interesting because I saw one committed suicide, but no one knew how he'd committed suicide, which was very, very telling.
That's very odd, yes.
It's like, hey, we know he's died. He's committed suicide because we've been told to say that, but we're not sure why and how he's died yet. What?
James Murray donated $5. Thank you, James Murray.
Thank you.
How
guys.
Impactful is the fact that we've had 70 or 80 years of peace in the Western world? Institutions have not been tempered. People have not had to fight. We trust, fund children, spendthrift, with the rights of our forefathers. That's something we'll be discussing at length once the democratization series kind of comes more to an end. The quote-unquote post-war consensus was only made possible by the World Wars. It's not really 70 or 80 years of peace, to be honest. It's 70 or 80 years of hegemony.
There's been proxy wars. There's been, when you say peace, you mean people haven't been dropping bombs on your hometown. Well, I mean, in England, actually, the Irish were dropping bombs quite regularly in England, right up until the 80s and even early 90s. America has had a lot of peace on that front. America was literally, you know, homegrown terrorists and activists were their biggest threat until when was it? The Boston Marathon bombing, which is the thing that happened after 9/11. But 9/11 was holy shit. They got a shock when that happened.
Maybe not, but
yeah,
I don't know. We'll have to talk about 9/11 at some point.
We will.
For it. Mitch makes a good point. Tactics, they are not policy. If you
they
don't
are.
Come up with a good way of gaining power, you will always lose. Yeah, that's what I've been telling people.
Yeah. Yeah. You can have the best policy in the world, but if you can't get into power, you're screwed. If you march into power like stormtroopers and then enact the most libertarian, peaceful solution possible and everyone's happy, they'll be glad you did it.
It's, like I said, it's the case of...
Ooh, silence. Have I got us yeeted? Are you there? Dude, can you hear me? I seem to have... Oh, no. Is Scrump Dad? I think it's just... can you... Right, can you guys hear me? Is the question.
Yeah, no. Sorry, my laptop. Decided to loosen.
Right, okay. Okay, cool. Because I was like, oh no, we've done it again.
No. Yeah, I should be back up and running in about 5 minutes. I think I know what's happened. I accidentally knocked my USB hub, which sometimes doesn't like being kicked. Hardware. No, it's It's a minor issue. I'll be back on my normal mic in a sec. As I was saying, sorry, that the system itself, people seem to mistake systems and process for policy and results and ideas. Systems and process don't do anything. Like, the process of democracy doesn't, in of itself, it's not neutral, but it doesn't have a belief system. Democracy itself is not a belief system, and people get that mixed up. And that's really what I was trying to say before before I decided to kick my USB hub and it caused a hangover.
You had me going, oh no, is it me? Have I done it? Is Mike? Yeah.
No.
Good.
Sorry, right. just a second there. It's not a. We always have one slight technical hiccup. But I'll be back running. I'm able to see your donations. I'll start reading donations again in a sec. I've done a few. Don't worry, they all will get read, all the super chats and the Streamlabs donations, best way to donate Streamlabs, and you know, all the new members will get read out. So don't worry about that one. And again, apologies for the change in audio clip there. But yeah, do go on, Trey.
Nothing. Sorry, I just got a DM from a friend of mine going, "What's my World of Tanks account?" I have no idea what my World of Tanks account is. I haven't used it in forever, and it's totally thrown me all of a sudden.
We were talking about process not being policy.
Process is not policy. Yes, and as I was saying, if you charge to power with literal stormtroopers and then enact the most peaceful libertarian and I don't want to use the word equal society, but liberal or nicest society possible, where the most people have the most freedom. And I know that sounds very, very utilitarian, but yeah, a very free society, people will thank you. People will want, you know, whereas you can sneak in slowly but and surely incrementally via a democratic system that is absolutely horrendous, and you end up where we are now, where everyone sat there going, this system is broken, it's horrible and nightmarish, and we got here through peaceful means.
I think a lot of the problems we have now is to do with what we refer to as the peaceful transfer of power. Power is never given up willingly, especially by those who have taken it and want to wield it. There's a paradox that I try and talk about quite a lot, which is those people who have managed to get themselves to the upper echelons of the power structure, those who are the not only global elites, but you know, the elites of the global elites, the people that govern policy, the people who govern things like the World Economic Forum, the people who, you know, the people who are above the faces, the people who really do wield the power and hold the money. To assume that those people are not Machiavellian actors is beyond naive, because you can't ascribe negative motive to everybody. You can't ascribe conspiratorial motive to everybody. But those who find themselves at the top of the power structure must have got there through means, and they must be more skilled or more ruthless than the average individual. So you must be more skeptical of them, and you must be more willing to ascribe a selfish motive to their actions because of where they are, who they are, and how they must have got there.
Oh yeah, everybody that's at the top has literally buried people on their way up there, almost always. Yes. And yeah, they're all there with their big smiles on, you know, on their faces, and oh, I'm doing this for all the right reasons, and I'm a really nice guy. They will have ended careers, certainly, on their way up. Almost every single time. Yeah, you can't not, because it's a rat race to the top, and everyone's out there with their knives stabbing each other in the back all the way to the top. You only need to look at how Theresa May got into power after the Brexit vote. And she'd look into how she didn't just suddenly get, oh, we're going to vote for her because Theresa May's wonderful. No, she'd did some almighty shitty deals and put the knife into a whole bunch of people. Boris was going to run at that point, and she nuked him. She got a huge amount of power, and she tried to throw the Brexit deal under the bus in the process. And they're all the same, every single one of them. Corbyn, scumbag.
Yes.
All of them, every single one are, yeah, I mean, oh my God, Keir Starmer, look into Keir Starmer, look at the things he put onto the back burner, and what policies and what police actions he shuts down. I mean, the guy...
Jimmy Savile's best friend, yeah.
He was literally, I know, right?
he's the one who decided that it was not in the public interest to prosecute him.
Was it Operation U-Tree? It was something like that. Yeah, no, he literally, you know, these guys, I'm the leader of the party of the people. It's like, you allowed paedophiles to continue raping children. Holy shit, what? Yeah, every single one of them, scum. And I say that, you know, unreservedly. Would I reach for the top there as well? No, I wouldn't want it.
No, a lot of people don't want it. And that's a great point that I'm just going to switch back to my good mind here. It's a great point that Mises actually makes as well. Not everyone wants to be an elite. Not everyone wants to accrue as much capital as possible.
No, I mean, I'll take the capital. I'll take the big piles of cash. I'll happily take the big piles of cash, but would I want to be the guy making the decisions all day, every day, to run the world? No, not really.
No, it sounds like a lot of work, honestly.
Yeah.
But these are the kind of things that people aren't willing to talk about, though. They're not willing to talk about the ugliness. They're not willing to talk about the ugly reality of power. Mm-hmm. They would rather live in a fantasy world where if we just vote Republican or Tory, things will fix themselves eventually, because those are the parties of sanity, aren't they, guys? I don't think people want to grapple with the fact that all of this has happened under the auspices of a conservative government, and all of the last decade happened under the auspices of a quote-unquote conservative government, mm-hmm. and that there is no electoral force out there. You know, the UKIP collapsed, the Brexit Party collapsed, mostly due to Nigel Farage basically being either a grifter or a controller. Either way, he's someone who has demolished the idea of a political alternative to the two-party, you know, system. The Lib Dems are distant third; they don't really exist.
You know what? Nigel Farage is a subject that I can ramble about because, yeah, every single time he's had the opportunity for power, and I get it. As I said, I don't want it. I wouldn't want it. Every time he's had the opportunity to get it, he stood down and collapsed the party that's gotten him to that position in the first place. If you don't want it, don't be running the party. By all means, back somebody else, but don't be running the party. Get everybody to have almost a cult of personality and then collapse it underneath you when you go, I don't feel like doing that anymore. Nigel Farage, maybe controlled opposition, maybe a grifter, scumbag.
The thing is, it's just like, okay, you don't want lockdowns, you don't want forever wars, you don't want COVID passports, you don't want uncontrolled mass immigration. Who are you going to vote for? How are you going to vote yourself out of this situation?
It's nice you think we can vote for ourselves out of this situation.
It's the hypothetical I actually posed on Seal of Approval. It's just like, okay, how is that? What is the reform path here? You know, do we start up a new political party? Do we have to work our way through the rigmarole of the system? And, you know, you'd have to get a full parliamentary majority. In fact, you'd have to probably get a two-thirds majority. And even in that case, most of what we say and most of what is said by any party who would be on an alternative to the current political establishment will be against the ministerial code of conduct. Mm-hmm. So what would happen is all of those people would be thrown out of parliament. Or you could end up in a situation where you end up with a party that comes into power who is very skeptical of the COVID legislation, who was denied entry to Westminster because they don't have COVID passports. You could end up with a situation like that. That's a very realistic possibility.
Yep.
It's, you know, if you work inside of the system, those who control the system can change it before you're able to get into power.
Yep.
A great example is the 2020 election, where they decided that the rules of elections would change three or four times in a matter of months to make it more difficult for Trump to be elected, because they held the reins of power and they were the ones who were able to control the electoral commissions in those states. If they think they are going to lose power, they will just cheat. Why wouldn't they? Because they have power. Elections are what happen when somebody already has the power to do one. If you are able to hold an election where the result will both be seen as legitimate and respected, you are already in power. That's the conundrum there. Someone has to already be in power for that to be a reality. There already has to be a hegemony and a power structure for that to exist in the first place. One must follow the other. Therefore, if you are holding an election, it is purely to get, you know, the illusion of permission of the people you rule over. It doesn't matter whether that election result is legitimate, in quotes, or not. You can say if it's legitimate or not, because you're in power. You're the one who is holding the election. You control the election. You interpret the results and you count the votes. So unless you believe that a regime is completely altruistic, unless you believe in the institutions of any Western government as completely beyond reproach, you can't not be skeptical of election results, because they are done under the monopoly of violence and justice. I mean, you know, there's some great stuff from the Mises University I've been watching about the idea of what is and isn't a state. And the line they draw is quite an interesting one, because they talk about, like, the Holy Roman Empire, the power of the church in medieval Europe, and there wasn't really the degree of monopolistic centralized power that there is now.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a monopoly on justice in many places. Local governors had their own version of justice. Princes who had claims of vassalship had their own versions of justice. And the church had its own version of justice. And you could appeal to any of those. You could really say that those people weren't under the auspices of a modern state. They existed in a different way. So we have to move ourselves out of this politics that's only really existed for the last 100 years, let's say. And we have all of human history before that to learn from, and how people govern themselves and each other. I don't know. There's a lot to be done.
There's a lot. Well, yes. I mean, I just put in chat a bit of a shit post that last time anyone had the right idea for how to change the system was on the 5th of November, 1605. And you know, he went, oh, some of you guys are okay, don't come into Parliament tomorrow, and screwed it up for himself.
Yes, he did. There's also the issue of things like the French Revolution,
yeah,
which actually led to a greater centralization of power in many ways, and led to the disastrous Napoleonic Wars.
Yep.
There's a great way to study history that I think we've been at least trying to do, honestly.
Yeah.
Which you have to analyze who really gains power, who really, you know, it's like the catalactic stuff.
Yeah.
Really. You just look at purely who gains, who loses, where are the power dynamics, and you get rid of all the fluff. And doing so from 2015 until now gives you a very stark picture, one, of what's going on, and two, what might have to be done about it. And I think the main problem of why people are stuck in this mindset is because they don't want to face up to that. They would rather live in this state of niceties where you can just reform, you can just vote for the right candidate and the world will change and everything will be okay again. And they you know, they get very upset when people say that won't happen and can't happen.
Yeah, I mean, parts of me would love to just keep on rolling it back and sort of round about sort of Julius Caesar, Augustus Caesar sort of periods of time, and just apply modern technology to that structure. But even that wasn't ideal. The problem, I don't even know where to start. This is the problem. I don't think anybody does. There is so much bureaucracy on top of more bureaucracy at this point that. Where do you start rolling back? What policies do you want to enact? Do you want to enact policies or do you want to remove policies? I would say you want to remove policies. That would be my first move. If God forbid the world went totally crazy and put me in charge of a country, my first move would be to roll back as many, probably England, back to around about the turn of the 19th century. As a start.
The issue is, and what we're dealing with here, is you have to first recognize that you exist near enough in a totalitarian state.
Of course.
You have to recognize that, and a lot of people aren't willing to recognize that. And second of all, you have to realize that all else is unimportant unless you can gain and wield power.
Yep.
That is, I think, you know, I'm trying to where I'm trying to show people with assistance from our researcher, Evelyn, I'll keep printing her, in the democratization series, how democracy changed the world for the worse and how it created a set of people who abdicated their own responsibility for security and then their own responsibility for things like education and health, and how they slowly became more and more debilitated because they thought that they could live at the expense of their fellow man, you know, the quote, you know, the famous quote about the great fiction and society.
Mm-hmm.
You have to first kind of deprogram people out of that, I think. And you have to give people the tools to show other people why the world is as it is and how the history they've been taught is not right. But once you do that, once you go past that and say, okay, here's where we are. We exist in a total state, and the people who rule over us are evil. Yes. What you do next is you have to gain power, and you have to talk about how you gain power and how you organize and how you reduce the power of those currently who are elites. And I think that's really the stage that we find ourselves at now. And it's not a conversation that's easy to have openly. It's not a conversation that's safe to have openly, certainly.
No.
But we need to understand first how power is wielded and who has wielded it, which is why, you know, circling back to the Leninism stuff and studying, you know, who has done revolutions, yes. Who has successfully initiated a revolutionary change in a society. So once you accept, yeah.
It's also worth noting that the tail can wag the dog. To coin the phrase in Wall Street, you can, as a small person, as a small nobody, if with the right shot, with the right shot that rings out around the world, whether it's an actual shot or whether it's a video or a catchy freaking meme, it doesn't matter. Yeah, if you've got the right one and it gets viral, the tail can wag the dog. You can change people's opinions. Quick, if you can get it out there quickly enough and done the right way, to make a certain amount of effect. You don't have to be in power to do that, but you do need to be in power for it to stick, and stick for a long time. Because, you know, sooner or later someone with a big black bag comes along and puts you in it, quite frankly, if you're too much of a problem, and you're not in power. Which is a concern.
There's two places I want to get people, which is the belief that democracy is unbeneficial, the belief that democracy is what has led us here, I think is important to instill in people, because I don't think they can exist in the current climate really and fully understand what's going on whilst also thinking that they can vote themselves out of it. I don't think that's possible. I think that you need to be able to, like, the first thing that needs to be done is to completely destroy people's belief in the democratic process. Because otherwise they will never think that they can take action without the permission of their fellow man. And I think the second is to instill in them a belief that they need, you know, if no one else does something, they need to, you know, if they don't do something, no one else will, that they need to take action. And whatever that action is, should be what they consider moral and right. And it's amazing that we reach a situation where most people aren't capable or willing to do that. That they have surrendered so much of their will to this entity, you know, known as the modern democratic state, that they are no longer willing to impose their own judgments and will on the world without the permission of others. It's from a historical point of view, it's bizarre. They have become like, you know, we talked about Homo economicus during the Keynesianism special, but this is like Homo democratus.
Yeah,
that they have become this new human being that believes in, you know, this magical process, and they are not able to take action outside of that magical process. It's you know, in a kind of anthropological sense, almost, it's bizarre.
I suggested this something the other day, and someone was, "What gives you the right to do that?" It's like, I am a human being, I can act, I have the ability, that is where I have the right to act and behave. Yes, sure, it impacts other people, but quite frankly, me going out the road and going to the shop and buying the last loaf of bread impacts on somebody. You can't not impact on someone when you're living. You know, you just have to accept the fact that your life has impacts on other people. And you know, deal with that, accept that that is reality, and start acting. Stop being, you know...
Well, that's why Hopper's first principles are so impactful.
Yeah.
Because he talks about the fact that, you know, you are the only person who really owns yourself.
Yes.
That is the first thing you must realize. And that's quite a powerful thing, because you know, your neighbor can't own you, the majority of other people can't, you know, whether they say you are a slave or not, ultimately you own your own thoughts. No one else can own your thoughts. Not yet, anyway. And in doing so, all you can do is put forward what you want and what you believe. And it sounds, a lot of people have criticized it as postmodern, but, you know, the only ethics for you are the ethics of the inside of your own mind. You can't have an ethical concept that doesn't come from your own brain. And a lot of people can't wrap their head around that. They don't seem to understand that. It's a very, very simple thing to say, but, you know, your ethics don't come, you know, from other people. Ultimately, your ethics come from your own thoughts. And you have the right to do that because you are you. You have the right to say what you want because you are you, and you own yourself and you control yourself.
Yes.
And again, that is not something that people who are very societal level minded are willing to conceive of, because they think that it ends with the war of all against all. They think that the competing desires of all these people without something like democracy will lead to chaos. But the competing desires of all these people when put in the ballot box don't lead to utopia. So you must find some way that people can imprint themselves on the world beyond something like democracy, which I think we have quite amply demonstrated has not brought about paradise.
Yeah, you know, just thinking about it, actually, the fact is, everyone's life has impact on everybody else's life. You only... The concept of my rights end where yours begin, etc., I'm really actually beginning to fall out of love with that phrase, shall we say. Because... It's more than that. My rights are my rights, and me acting, you know, in be it in war, be it in love, whatever. Yeah, you know, I see a girl, I really fancy that girl. Somebody else really fancies that girl. I go, you know, there is therefore a war for the affection of that person. Yeah, you have impact. You are taking and vying for rights on things and people.
It's something that if you study Hopper's praxeology,
yeah,
is something that becomes quite obvious. There's some great stuff in there about self-evident truths, and in order to be a human being, you know, for me to sit here and say in English, I am not a human being, that is what he calls a performative contradiction, because yes, I must be a human being to be able to sit here and say that in English. You know, I must have a human brain to be able to do that.
Yes.
So, you know, I can't deny the fact that I am, in fact, a thinking human being who is capable of language, because I'm sat here speaking to you. And there's some great stuff about that, that really, you know, it's not the fact that we're all trapped inside our own heads and can't get around that. It's the fact that because we are inside our own heads, there are certain truths that are universal when it comes to praxeology, because you are a human being and you are capable of communication. And there are universal things that we all can and must do as human beings. It's very powerful. And I'd recommend anyone who's not, you know, looked at Hopper's praxeology to have a look at it, because it's a bit mind bending at first, but once you wrap your head around it, like I said, it's extremely powerful. And it's again, it's something that will break people out of what I would consider this 2015 mindset, where they think they just need to, you know, I always talk about twiddling the knobs, and people always laugh at that. They have a good euphemizing about me twiddling the knobs. But that's what people thought in 2015. They just thought, well, if we get rid of the SJWs, you know, if we stop, you know, Anita Sarkeesian, things will just go back to normal and we'll be okay. But unfortunately, that turned out not to be true, and a large amount of people are having a lot of trouble dealing with that fact. That, you know, we cannot simply just stop and just start easing, and the world is safe.
The world is never safe. The world has never been safe. The world will never be safe. And people try to make the world safe, take your rights away, and your ability to act in it when they do so. So their life should be made less safe by the fact that they're trying to make yours safe.
That's the point I made before. It's that, you know, a lot of people will make concessions to platitudes like ending racism. A lot of people who are even quote-unquote on the right will say, well, yes, of course, ending racism is a laudable goal. No, it isn't.
No, it isn't.
The logical implication, the logical endpoint of ending racism is that no one anywhere can ever have a racist thought. So in order to quote-unquote end racism, you must end human thought. You know, that's the logical endpoint. But people will partake in these niceties and do not want to grapple with, like, you know, what are the rights of children if society breaks down? You know, what are the rights of children not guaranteed by the state? A lot of people got very hung up on, you know, Rothbard's ethics of liberty. It's a bit of an autistic thing, really, because he's trying to make this universal ethic, which sometimes, you know, sometimes sounds a bit brutal and sometimes sounds a bit out of place, like when he talks about the free market for unwanted children. But essentially what he's describing is what rich people do, like private orphanages. Mm. Private orphanages and adoption agencies exist.
Yes,
and
they
are what rich people use, and you pay hundreds of thousands of pounds to basically have a child provided to you. So functionally, rich people buy children and private adoption agencies sell children. But because it gets rubber stamped by the process, we don't bat an eyelid at that. That isn't free market exchange involving children.
This is the old sort of adage that we do live in an ANCAP society. You just don't have enough money to realize it yet. Which there is something to be said for that. It's not completely true, but yes, if you have Bezos level money, you can pretty much, you are living in an ANCAP society because you can buy whatever you like.
Law is only ever reactionary as well. You can't prevent crime using law. You know, we don't live in Minority Report. There's a huge amount of donations built up here, so I'll give those a quick read in a sec. Law is reactionary. You can't, you know, banning murder doesn't prevent murder.
No.
You know, if people want to kill each other, the law won't stop them. And that's the whole thing. It's like, wow, I can't believe you want to live in a world where there's no law and order. It's just like, well, the existence of policemen doesn't stop crime. They can only react to it, really.
Yes, policemen are the janitors of society. They clean up the mess after the crime has happened.
The idea that you can create a system that prevents all the terrible things that humans want to do to each other is incredibly utopian. The idea that via policy you can reduce crime is utopian. It is. The crime rates, you might as well slaughter a goat and read the entrails what the crime rates are going to be. It doesn't make any sense, and anyone who says that they can actually control crime is lying to you.
You know,
they don't have the power to do that.
I'm almost certain the only thing you can do by enacting policies is increase crime, because every time you make a new law, you give people the ability to break more laws. You can only create more criminals. The only way to enact policies that would reduce crime is to stop making things illegal.
It's amazing that we have this massive amount of legalism. Trey, you've seen, I don't know, there's a great season of The Wire where basically one of the police lieutenants, or maybe he's a captain, but one of the senior policemen in Baltimore basically decides to legalize drugs and focus on other forms of enforcement because he's sick of rounding up low-level drug dealers.
Yeah. I need to get back into The Wire. I think I watched the first two seasons and then stopped for some reason. So, yeah.
But that becomes unacceptable. That is unacceptable because you can't unilaterally just end the war on drugs. You can't just unilaterally decide that certain types of criminality are a complete, you know, waste of resources for the system. The system must perpetuate itself because it must justify its own existence. And again, that's the point that a lot of libertarians make about law and order and justice and modern states, is that all they do is encourage more legalism and therefore encourage more crime. And the price of law enforcement will always go up and its efficiency will always go down, because if they have the monopoly on it, they're incentivized to do that. You can charge as much as you want for as bad a service as possible because no one else can offer that service in a society that has, you know, a structured police force. They are the police. No one else is the police. No one else has that qualified immunity. They have a monopoly on being the police. And a lot of people scratch their head at that concept and think it's stupid and can't quite understand it. But like I've described it, if cars had only ever been made by a nationalized entity, you would find the idea of privately sold and manufactured cars like impossible to think of. No one could afford that. Cars are too expensive. The state has to make them.
You know, I was just thinking, going back to that. You know what? You legalize drugs. You legalize heroin, cocaine, the works, yeah? And you literally kill organized crime gangs on the spot. They would suddenly cease to exist. They wouldn't have any money anymore. You wouldn't just actively reduce crime. You would clobber huge amounts of serious criminal enterprise. Like, it's, and the car manufacturers. I kind of disagree with that, but they tried that in Eastern Europe and, you know, sort of Soviet era sort of times. And you'd be on a waiting list for 4 years. You'd have to a member. You'd have to be signed up to the right political party. Not that there was a choice of political parties, but you'd have to be a member of the Communist Party in good standing and wait 4 years for your larder to turn up that was basically made of denim jeans with, I mean, it really was. It was.
From their point of view, cars were incredibly difficult to come by and extremely scarce, and if the state didn't make them, no one would. No, you can't make a car in your own workshop. And, you know, cars are so difficult, you have to wait for them for 4 years. It's like, well, you know, imagine if the government didn't provide them, where would the cars come from? You'd have to put yourself in the logic of someone who's been propagandized into thinking that cars are too difficult for private entities to make. Or the private entities making cars would end society as they know it. That is, you know, basically what these people were taught, because they were taught that capitalism was evil. Therefore, capitalists creating cars was an evil act. Therefore, the state must create cars. It's like that. It's just like, well, private security is, you know, immoral. You know, a private police force would be unworkable. But...
I don't
know. Why?
I was going to say, aren't the Democrats literally going around defunding the police at the present moment and then hiring their own private police forces to guard them?
Formatively, it's complex because that isn't really happening on a universal level. If anything, police budgets have, in certain areas, been massively increased. Capitol Hill, Capitol Police.
Yes, they've been hugely funded by, you know, they've been buying huge amounts of military equipment, actually, haven't they? Their funding has gone up dramatically, but they're not staffing. It's all,
APCs
and ARs. Yes.
Sorry, Gaius Nautius Caesar, that was about 45 minutes ago. Sorry about that taking so long. Thanks to you guys and Robert Barnes at Via Barnes Locals. I have been diving deep into the rabbit hole. Fuck you, but also thank you. Yeah, it's once you start to see how things are, you can't really unsee it. And again, a lot of people who are stuck in that mindset just want to unsee it. Like, again, they want to reset. They think 2015 was more innocent, so they just basically mentally want to go back. Anyway, Glowy has done a bunch of donations here. $2, $2, and $2, and then $5. Good lord. Conservative establishment or whatever they are just want to preserve the process. Yeah, basically, they are the guardians of the process. They are the integration part of, you know, of the managerial elite, if you understand what I'm talking about there. They are what comes after the agitation cycle, and they are the consolidation cycle. They are, you know, the slow it down, do it at the speed limit part of the establishment. That's what they are. That's the role that they fill. But yeah. Another $2 donation from Glowy. Another reason why the war in Vietnam didn't work is they stopped them from going into enemy territory.
Yes.
Yeah, in Iraq and Afghanistan, the reason is because politicians were using it to get money and resources. Opium, yes. Well,
opium, oil pipelines, various other things. They still could have won if they'd killed all of the Afghanis. I'm serious. If you want to win in Afghanistan, kill them all. That's it. You win.
That's the fact. Yeah, they have to. That's what the Taliban did. They had to make the U.S. establishment willing to commit a genocide on a massive scale, and they weren't.
That's what I'm saying. When I say they don't have the testicular fortitude to win an insurgent war, you want to win an insurgent war? Kill them all. Kill them all.
Again, that's the
cut the press off. Kill them all, and then put your own people in there and go, look, we won. It's our land now. Fuck you guys. That's how you win.
Well, also the Vietnam War was basically played very, very weirdly. In that they would basically genocide people for a time and then they pull back. The Vietnam War itself is a great one to study because I don't it's not really a war that they were meant to win or a war they really wanted to win. It was a very performative war, and there's a huge amount of sides to it. And, you know, the Americans' relations with China is a big part of it. And, oh, there's just so much stuff with Vietnam. It's quite a complex conflict, and it's a great way to highlight how basically the Cold War was a wink and a nod and a bit of an international puppet show to expand and justify both the Soviet Union and the NATO spending. They really were very much happy each other existed. In fact, the West seemed very despondent when the Soviet Union collapsed because they weren't quite sure what to do after that. They had to create new enemies. But anyway, sorry, I got to read some more of these. James May donated $5 for evidence of how you can totally transform a society. Looks Germany. The process of denazification is going to come up in the democratization series. Don't worry about that. Kizza donated $5. Democracy isn't the reason for this mess. It's minority rule that is the problem and always has been the problem. If democracy was actually enforced, almost no tariff policy would have been passed, but we're actually a constitutional monarchy. That's not the thing. Is you can, if you want quote unquote more democracy, that's what California has. California has a large amount of direct democracy, and it's terrible. Hasn't worked. I can bring out great examples of, you know, no offense, but that's very real democracy. It's never been tried. Direct democracy is actually possibly worse than what we have, because it really does just create a consistent shifting tyranny of the majority in groups of people will vote to, you know, pass vengeance on each other. That's why in the modern system that there's all these supposed checks and balances on, you know, the worst excesses of democracy, because even they have to admit that pure direct democracy leads to chaos, which it does. Glowy donated $5. The left frames their moral arguments not as moralistic but caring. And others, which is a moral deal of wanting which is best for them. Normies don't understand its implications. If you care about people, you can justify doing anything. Yeah, it's a lot of it is very surface level, but they're able to get their arguments out there. And it doesn't matter if they're bad arguments because they have the hegemony. So they can just put them forward louder and in ubiquity. And, you know, they teach people it in schools. People are fed this from an early age, so it doesn't matter if it doesn't make any sense. It's what is taught. James Murray donated $5. What do you think of more optimistic takes like those of Curtis Yarvin? I'm not actually familiar with the takes of Curtis Yarvin, to be honest. I'd have to look into that. I don't know what the takes are. So sorry, I can't answer that question because I don't actually know who that is. So I will look into that though. Yarvin. Maybe not completely right now, but
no. I'm not familiar.
Oh, Mitch's Moorbrook, sorry, of course. I agree with some of what Moorbrook says, sorry. I think that the system must at some point collapse under its own weight. Mitch's Moorbrook. He is the big autism, but I think he's interesting. There's a lot of good discussions around what he said. Are you aware of the whole Moorbrook thing?
No, I do. You know what, the name rings a bell. I've got a feeling I am aware. It's just there's been a lot of shit happening the last couple of weeks, so my brain isn't functioning.
I do know you've been by the whole Mencius Moorbrook thing. He's somebody who's considered like a quote unquote neo reactionary,
right?
And he's someone who's very much, he's someone who's got beliefs that are kind of like what the anti-federalists were, basically. But he's quite one of his most famous things is the whole Dark Enlightenment and the idea that the establishment of the cathedral and the kind of the American hegemonic society is this Dark Enlightenment. And he's somebody who's quite similar, like I said, to the anti-federalists in terms of how he sees things and how he sees America. I just recommend looking into Moorbrook and some of the stuff that he's kind of, he was a blogger, quote unquote, for a while. A few people have used the name, but basically he's someone who is kind of very much on the, what people consider the NRX or more recently a radical libertarian. And he has a very, again, anti-federalist view of American history, which I think is pretty similar to a lot of what the Mises stuff is. More donations, sorry guys. James Merry donated $5. What do you guys think of Optimist? Oh, sorry, that's what I said. Sorry. Mm. Yeah, I think we're all up to date now, actually. So I finally read out all the super berries there.
We have had a huge amount of super berries this stream. We really have. Thank you guys. It's been difficult keeping Fischenberg in different points on the screen to pop in when they've been arriving. It's been
We've had about $60 in Streamlabs donations and about I know it's mixing currencies here, but about $20 in Super Chat. So that's like $80, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. So I'm blown away.
Also, this seems to actually being served to our subscribers, so we've got more than 100 people watching at certain points, which has been a bit of a struggle recently, not because of you guys. I'm not moaning about our viewership. It's just because YouTube's been burying us, as it does to everybody. Yep. So it's good to see a lot of you guys again, and hopefully you'll get served our future streams.
I was told that, Die turned around to me and went, I actually got a notification that your stream was happening this evening, which I think is the first time I've heard anyone tell me that they'd actually seen a notification. So who knows? Maybe the slight hiatus on the democratization and going back to these has done us a favor or two on the notifications.
Maybe I don't know. Like I said, it's basically divination, and we'll just continue doing what we want on this YouTube channel.
I agree. And yeah. I want to get this.
I don't want to do. I don't want to be a quote unquote YouTuber.
No.
Not to sound arrogant, but I have a career. And up until for the past few years, I've been very well paid and compensated for my real world skills.
Speak for yourself. I am a professional.
Well,
I am now anyway.
you're very close to being actually registered disabled. Not to put too much out there.
But... Yeah, thank you. But as some people know, I was made redundant last year because of ill health and various other things. And unfortunately, I'm trying to get registered as a disabled person. Not that you would know it, just look at me half the time. But the other half of the time you'd be like, why is Trig grimacing and pulling faces and looking angry and in pain? Sadly.
No, it's a case of I don't think I'd be particularly happy or secure doing this as a quote-unquote career. I don't know why people want to. I don't want to have to take, I don't begrudge people who take sponsorships, but I don't want to have to get on the YouTube treadmill. It seems a bit miserable.
I take on board what you're saying, but if there's somebody going, oh, you're earning £40,000 a month, I could get on board with that. I'm just going to throw it right out, though. I could do that.
The problem is, though, that you end up becoming like these metrics chasers.
Yeah.
Once it becomes your livelihood and the stakes become a lot higher than, well, maybe getting deplatformed means that your income disappears, you're just not going to take the risks. That's why a lot of people, I think, have become very risk averse.
They've
got stuck in this safe 2015 thinking.
Yes.
That they have made the calculation that their income is worth more to them than saying the truth.
Yes, I would totally agree with that. There's also a bit of chasing the dragon. I got lots of clout in 2015 by doing this. Therefore, I'm going to continue doing exactly that and hope I still get the same kick from it.
Again, it's a lot of it is to do with really just following the policies of the social media companies.
Yeah.
2015, I think, has become like the acceptable limit of what you can say. And anyone who kind of goes beyond that level of political thought is considered a dangerous extremist like we are.
I found out there's a couple of people in my family circle have had you've been exposed to radical information on Facebook, and I'm sat there going, oh no, I bet that's me. But yeah.
Yeah, that hasn't happened to me yet because I don't use Facebook.
I kind of started, because of this thing that's happened with the NHS, and I also started posting a couple of Hopper quotes on Facebook and some other stuff. And there was a nice article in the Telegraph that resulted in a comment about, you know, please clap for your government sponsored euthanasia center, kind of thing from me on Facebook. And yeah, people are some of my family are like, dude, are you okay? You've been quiet on Facebook for ages, and suddenly that happened. Someone hacked your account. It's like, no, I've just been. Yeah, maybe I should stay off Facebook. Too many IRL friends and family that aren't quite aware of things. Yes.
Oh yeah, Kizza has just donated again. Thank you, Kizza.
On the
subject of cars, did you both forget about British Leyland and the complete shit show that was? If the private sector had complete control of British Leyland, it would have been as big as VW or Toyota. The car industry is kind of a complex one, but yes, British Leyland is a great example of why the public sector is less efficient than the private sector.
Yes.
And why the market is the best way to create goods.
There was also a massive problem with Leyland with unions. Just saying. That was a major problem with that. And it's such a damn shame because I can really go on for a long time. In fact, you've been party to some long conversations between myself and other people about Leyland cars and how that era of British motorsport and motors, the Austin Healeys, the Triumphs, the so many beautiful cars ruined by a bunch of shiftless, lazy communists that didn't want to make cars, but happened to have a job making cars and didn't do their work because they'd only turn up for 2 days a week. And then they'll be on strike.
I think people just have forgotten all that. We'll get to that at some point.
God.
Yeah.
Leyland.
Anyway, we're going to have to tail this off now, I think. So if you have any questions, do you ask them now? Because in the next 5 minutes, we're probably going to be ending.
Fair enough.
I need to get to bed.
Yes, you have. At some point. You have a big thing tomorrow. So yes. Good luck with that. By the way, I had that yesterday, and funerals and wakes are weird days, and they hit you in strange ways. You don't realise they're going to hit you in. I had to stand up in church and do a whole poetry reading thing, and I hadn't seen how many people were in the church. I sort of got up there and was like, I'm used to public speaking on the internet and this, that, and the other. Oh, dear God, there's a church full of people looking at me. And immediately became very self-conscious and just sort of read things out very, very quickly and scurried back. I can handle a 20-man meeting in a boardroom and stuff, but a couple of hundred people all standing there or sitting there looking at you is weird.
Yeah, that is a bit odd.
Yeah, that was it was a bit of a strange one. I have it was a very interesting day yesterday. I won't go into it too much in public though, because
of course, but yes, it's again. Thank you guys for coming. Thank you guys for bearing with us while we kind of ramble a little bit. I know it's mostly just been chat on screen and answering you guys' questions, but honestly, you've put so much to us that we've not, you know, it's been good. It's been good that we've been able to follow this subject and get a lot of audience feedback. That's what I like doing. I like interacting with you guys.
Yeah.
You know, I don't just read the super chats and the donations. If there's a good comment in chat, I will read it. And I do try and keep up with it. I like being a slightly smaller creator because some of the stuff I used to do with other people, it was very difficult to interact with the audience. Honestly, getting to that larger level, it becomes something different, really. I think this is about what we can keep up with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't want to deliberately sabotage the numbers, but I quite like kind of the low triple digits people watching and being able to keep up with the chat. That's very comfy. It's much more like you're having a conversation than having things bombarded at you. You have to act differently as a larger content creator. And again, it's not something I've ever wanted to or ever probably will make a living of. So I would much rather have it in a manageable format and manageable size and be able to really engage with people. Because now a few of you do DM me on Discord about especially the democratization stuff, asking questions, because it's quite dense. And I've had some very good back and forth. You know, people have been willing to engage and listen. Even people who are a bit more skeptical have been able to get something out of it. So it's been very good. It's been very positive. So yeah, we're going to try and keep this YouTube channel going as much as possible. Sure. Life does always get in the way.
Yes, I think I'm going to start getting back into doing some game streaming. In fact, had some people hassling me to do a D&D streaming thing, or maybe I should run a D&D, and I've been thinking about it, and maybe you and I could talk about that. We could. I've had some ideas. Maybe it wouldn't be a D&D. It might be a Cthulhu. It might be a something. But I'm having some ideas.
Tabletop, yeah.
Yeah. Could be a good chip hosting sort of session as well. Giggle, whatever. But not Cyberpunk. Not Vampire the Masquerade.
No, I'm going to say every time I consider taking part in a tabletop, things get weird. So I've just decided to not take part in tabletops generally.
Fair enough.
Again, thank you guys for watching, and we are actually going to bow out now. So thank you for everyone who's donated. Thank you to everyone who is a consistent member. We've not had many new members recently, but basically everyone who's a member has remained a member. So thank you for that. The recurring payments do add up. And then we'll eventually get some stuff out of AdSense. I'm supposed to in the middle of this month. So that does get split between us. We split everything 50-50 here.
Yes.
So yeah, when I get that, I'll actually let you guys know, because that'll be a bit of an event. But thank you guys for watching, and goodbye from me.
And yeah, take it easy. I'll see you guys later.
Oof, that was a...